Prince Charles and Camilla, Duchess of Cornwall, have missed out on something quite special. Yesterday, you might have seen on the news last night, they went for a walk through the City Botanic Gardens in Brisbane. But if they had waited just a few more days, a tree, just one very special tree, would quite possibly have waved to the royal couple. And we know how much Prince Charles likes talking to plants. That would have excited him. That tree is being taught how to wave by scientist and artist David Harris. David, good morning and welcome to Mornings.
Good morning, Spencer, from a bright and sunny Brisbane City Botanic Gardens.
So it is sunny. Is it windy? Because it's a bit windy in Springfield at the moment.
Yeah, there is quite a bit of wind around here, but fortunately we're protected from it by large stands of bamboo.
Ah, sweet. Now I know. And that's permanent bamboo?
That's right.
I think now, okay, anyone who knows the gardens knows where you are. Sort of that the middle pathway there, is it? Sort of as you head up to the cafe at the top and then the stage.
Just off to the side from there, yeah.
Okay, paint a picture for us. It sounds wacky, fascinating at the same time, and I am dying to see it in action. What on earth are you trying to do?
I am building a piece that allows people to talk with trees through motion. Basically, what happens is as people walk along the path next to the tree or sit on the bench underneath, the tree will notice that they're there and wave at them with half a dozen limbs that I've reattached to the tree from another of the same species of the tree that was being cut down, and the limbs will literally wave at you.
So this is a real tree, and
it is a real tree. It's a Fraxinus ubde, sitting here in the gardens, as I said, I've taken limbs from another of that species to wave at you.
And how have you attached the limbs from the other tree? What are you using?
Well, it's a little mechanism that I've had to design and engineer to put together. But it's basically a motor that drives an axle, all mounted in laser-cut wooden boxes that strap onto the tree limbs. So, of course, in the gardens, we have to do it so that we don't leave any marks on the tree whatsoever. Everything here is protected. So it's wrapped in hessian that will cushion it against sharp edges and is breathable and all these sorts of things. But it's basically strapped on. And then some wires, cables run down the tree to a control box where the brain of it sits. It all operates from there.
And sensors of some sort.
That's right. It actually uses ultrasonic distance sensors. So these are, you know, a bit like a radar it's a bit like a submarine sensor, really. It sends out a ping and then reflects off anything that's nearby and then bounces back, and the sensor times how long it takes. And from that can work out how close someone is. So it can tell if someone's getting closer to the sensors and closer to the tree and then act in response to that.
And does it respond to specific actions from people?
Not really. That's quite complicated to do. It will respond to actions in the sense that it depends on where you are. So it won't actually be able to see your hand waving at it, but as you walk along the path in front of the tree, different regions will activate different responses from the tree, different limbs waving at you.
And why, I guess, is the key question. Why did you want to do this?
Well, it was a way to sort of explore the relationship that we have with trees. You know, humans and trees have a complicated relationship that works both ways, but we don't normally notice this day to day. It's a relationship that happens over the time frame of seasons or years or even whole lifetimes. What I wanted to do was really try to highlight this sort of relationship by making it more immediate, by compressing the time scales on which we operate. Okay, so instead of us breathing out carbon dioxide, which the tree uses to grow, and the tree giving out oxygen, which we use to grow, now this is not a visible thing. We don't notice this on a time scale of seconds or minutes or days. So instead, I've changed the form of interaction we have to make it more immediate, just to remind us that we do have this two-way interaction with trees.
Yes, well, the only time we have an instant interaction with trees, I guess, is when we're cutting them down or doing something like that.
Well, yeah, I guess so, yeah. Or I mean, there are some species that react very quickly, like Venus flytrap.
Yes, yes.
And some other things that do respond very quickly. But, you know, that's more of a one-way interaction.
Yes.
So the idea here is that as people walk by the tree, it will respond, but people also will be able to work out what the patterns are. It's almost like, what are the rules of the game of communicating with this tree?
So are you a scientist or an artist or a philosopher? It strikes me as a bit of philosophy or psychology or something thrown in there as well.
Look, I think it's a mix of everything.
What box are you in? Put yourself in a box.
I prefer to not put myself in a box. I've been unable to characterize what I am for years and years and years. I just wear different hats at different times, but often multiple hats at one time. This project is really a mix of science, engineering, art, and design, all mixed together.
When you create crossover science art, and it is a thing, isn't it? It is a genre.
Oh, absolutely. It's growing quite rapidly. There's a lot of this going on around the world, and I think it's quite an exciting field of art. But I'm actually also interested in how the art can influence the science and make it a two-way kind
right.
of interaction.
Because that's what I was going to ask you. How important is it that both the science and the art are considered, as opposed to using good science to create inferior art or vice versa?
And this is a real issue. You know, for a long time, the field of science art has created a lot of mediocre pieces. People have thought, oh, that's interesting. It's sort of a buzzword, this new field of science art. And by new, I mean decades old, but it's really come to prominence in maybe the last 15 years or so. But, you know, now people are coming to a more sophisticated view of this. And they're making art that really stands alone as art. And that's something that I really try to emphasize in the work that I do. But there's another layer to it. You know, if you know something of the science, or if you're alerted or taught something about the science, there's this extra level on which you can understand the work and appreciate it. So I really like to work on these different levels so that people can come to the piece and just enjoy it as an experience. Or they can think more deeply about it and sort of address some of the questions that I'm trying to get to with the work.
What are your thoughts on the buzzword or buzz anagram STEM and the push by some, particularly in the arts, to change that to STEAM, to get arts into science and technology? Because sometimes they are different things, surely.
Oh, absolutely. You know, art and science are different. There are a number of similarities, and, you know, there used to be a lot of debate about, are they the same in reality or are they different? And that's sort of a very one-dimensional way of looking at it. And people have moved on to think in more sophisticated ways about the way in which science and art are related. The whole STEM to STEAM issue is a complicated one. I would probably argue and be very opinionated about the idea that a lot of the STEM to STEAM movement is driven by political policy and commercial interests. A lot of it has come out of trying to build, one of the things that it comes from is trying to get more funding for the arts.
Yes.
And it is certainly true that around the world, the STEM fields have been receiving a really big boost in recent years relative to other fields. And I don't begrudge that at all. You know, we need to be funding STEM fields, absolutely. But to some extent, the arts have suffered relative to the sciences. And it's sort of interesting because if we only look at the sciences, we're really missing out on a whole other aspect of life and culture and society. And in fact, places like Google now have discovered that if they only employ people who specialize in STEM, that they're really missing out and their development of product isn't anywhere near as powerful. So they are actually starting to employ people who are experienced and trained in the humanities and arts because they bring a different perspective, a somewhat broader perspective than just the engineering aspects.
Yes, that's really interesting assessment of it. That's fascinating because that's what what you basically said there is what I've observed. If people, when you see someone saying, hang on, call it steam, don't call it STEM, it generally is someone saying, hang on, we want some of that too, because STEM is, at the moment, cool. It's just a cool buzzword.
Yeah, that's right. So I truly believe in the idea that the science fields and the arts and humanity fields should be working together more. The question is, do we frame it in this STEM to STEAM kind of picture?
Because one of the uses of STEM at the moment is around getting women or girls to study STEM, isn't it? So because
that's one aspect of it. Yeah,
it's where you often see that. There's a I mean, you probably, because you're in the sciences and you're in the arts, you probably see it a lot more. But just as a sort of lay observer, the push to get women or girls to study STEM subject is a big thing. So if you then say, let's put the A in there as well. Well, hang on a sec. Girls were probably, or women were probably studying the arts subjects. The whole point of using STEM in that context was to get women into engineering and maths and science and technology.
To some extent. But, you know, the issue isn't necessarily getting people in the first place. It's just that the power structures in so many of these fields, and this includes the arts, are really gendered. You know, they're male dominated. In the art world, it's men who have the power and the money, command much bigger prices for commercial art. So it really is an issue in all these fields. You know, it's endemic to our society, unfortunately. We certainly are seeing a lot more of the women in STEM movement, and that's fantastic. So I think it's a slightly different issue, but it's at least as important.
It's a discussion to continue over a glass of wine at some point. When, just to bring it back to where all this started, David Harris, when will your waving tree be ready for us to interact with it?
Well, if all goes well, at the end of today. But the exhibition officially opens tomorrow. That's Friday evening. And we'll be running for 10 days.
And it's part of the Festival 2018, is it?
Yes, it is. It's in particular the Botanica exhibition, which is here in the City Botanic Gardens. There are 16 artists who have been selected from around Australia to create work specifically for the exhibition, for the festival. And they're all being installed over the past couple of days and finishing up today.
Fantastic. And what's the absolute next thing you have to do when you get off the phone?
I am currently re-engineering some pieces that have failed rather spectacularly in some of the trials I've been doing up on the tree. You know, when you build these things, there are a lot of things that you can predict and test, but not everything. And so there have been a few issues, so I'm actually having to remake some parts on the modules. I've had to pull everything down off the tree, rebuild these pieces, find workarounds, and then I'll put them back up in the tree and get it all working again. But, you know, this is a standard part of the process when you're making these mechatronic kinds of pieces. That, you know, the mechanical parts can go wrong, the electronic and electrical parts can go wrong, and you just have to make them all work in concert to have things working exactly how you want. There are so many uncertainties in building a piece like this that you sometimes just have to do it, see what happens, and fix things that aren't working quite the right way. So today I have a bunch more engineering to do and fixing, but then by the end of the day, it will be up and running in the tree.
All right, you better get back to it. Great to chat to you, David. Thank you.
Thank you, Spencer.
David Harris, scientist, artist. Don't put him in a box. Just give him lots of different hats to wear. And go along to the City Botanic Gardens, have a look at that exhibition, and in particular, keep an eye out for David's waving tree.